And we're back on the Rule of Three after a little hiatus. Two comics, three topics, 10 minutes each. The perfect podcast for your modern lifestyle. I'm here with Brian Miller, as always. My name is Tim Slagle. And we're going to be talking about why we haven't done one in almost 2 weeks.
It was a good reason, at least.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it was a it was a positive reason, I should say.
No
hospitalizations.
we're also going to be talking about the loss of a someone we all remember, and we're going to do a little memorial to that. And but the first item on the agenda is I think probably what's dominating the 24-hour news cycle right now is the fact that Jeff Sessions said that Hawaii is an island in the Pacific. And
which is topographically accurate. You could make an argument that the entire continent of North America and South America connected are, in fact, an island located in the Atlantic and Pacific. Yeah. I mean, that is an actual argument one could make, I think.
It's, well, he didn't actually say all of Hawaii was an island in the Pacific, because it's actually seven or more. Eight, if you include the one that Gilligan's Island castaways were on. It's
Was that supposed to be Hawaii-ish? I never understood where Gilligan's Island was supposed to be.
Yeah, it was Hawaii-ish. Is the sure. the charter left out of Hawaii, and they always, I think the professor always placed it like 40 miles southeast of Hawaii or something like that.
With a map he made out of coconuts.
So, that was irrelevant to the discussion, I guess. I was going to go into Gilligan's Island there for a second. I go, no, wait, we're not talking about Gilligan's Island. We're talking about Jeff Sessions' island.
A man who put himself on his own little island this week.
And here's the thing. Here's the Slagle take on it. It's not just the Slagle take, it's his take. I saw him interviewed by George Stephanopoulos yesterday.
And that sounds riveting.
And And George said, you know, what were you trying to say? And he basically clarified it. He said, the president gave an executive order. We have 700 federal judges. If one out of those 700 is more powerful than the president, there's something wrong with the way the government is set up. And Stephanopoulos.
Or you could argue that someone has to have some form of checks and balances on the president, especially when he's not doing anything through Congress.
Yeah.
It's a fail-safe mechanism.
Yeah, but the president is allowed to set the kind of policy. The Supreme Court has already determined that the president does have certain powers as far as immigration.
What if the president said all immigrants will be shot in the head on sight?
No, he doesn't have that authority.
But what if he issued an executive order?
He doesn't have that. There is not that authority. You mean what would the procedure be if he did that?
Or my point being, at what point do we decide there must be some point at which you agree the president doesn't have the authority to make unconstitutional declarations if the declaration is deemed unconstitutional. So at what point can he violate the Constitution and it's okay?
The Constitution gets violated all the time, is according to other branches of government. I mean, basically, what you've got is three branches of government continually struggling. And the first executive order he gave restricting immigration was sent back by the courts. Okay, there was a court that said it. So then he took it. He took that executive order and reworked it. With Jeff Sessions, they reworked it so that it satisfied all the comments that the court had made about it, and then reordered it, you know, following, of course, the checks and balances. And then some guy in Hawaii says, "Nah, that's still unconstitutional."
Well, he's not some guy.
Well, yeah, he actually
I'm
is.
I'm not saying he's the president, but he's not just some guy.
What?
I can't do it. I'm some guy.
Yeah, he's a federal judge on an island in the Pacific. He's one out of 700 federal judges. He gave no rationale for it. He just said, no, that's you can't do that. So basically, we don't think
he's the only one out of those 700 with that sentiment. Or if he hadn't done it, I don't think someone else in that 700 wouldn't.
But
have.
It was him that did it, and that's what Jeff.
Well, somebody has to be the one,
and that's what Jeff Sessions. It's got to be a court. It's one person does not have one judge does not have the equivalent power of the president. That was Jeff Sessions' point. Is a court, perhaps, the court system, and it has to, and he said this will work its way through the courts. It's going to be appealed, it's going to go up to the next court, it might end up in the Supreme Court, who knows? But Jeff Sessions' point was that one out of 700 federal judges, not a court, just one judge says it's unconstitutional, that's not the proper balance of power. That's all he was saying.
And I say again, there's nothing to presuppose that there's just one out of 700 judges. That is a weird leap of logic to say that, if this guy wouldn't have done it, none of the other 699 would have stepped forward and done the thing.
But he is the only one who did it. That's the point,
a coalition of judges who got together. Would that satisfy you?
Probably not. But you know, it still has to work its way through the proper system. It's the court says you can't do that, then do you take it to the next court and on up? But that's not what happened. It was one judge said you can't do that, and that was Jeff Sessions' point. That's all I'm saying. That was his point. One guy on an island in the Pacific, George Stephanopoulos said, "Well, why did you phrase it that way?" And Jeff Sessions said, doesn't anyone have a sense of humor anymore?
I don't think they do about this sort of thing. And I don't think Jeff Sessions is the kind of person with enough empathy or compassion to have any notion of why they wouldn't find it funny.
I don't know why they... Well, I know why they wouldn't find it funny. I kind of found it funny. I mean, I was listening to the radio show that he said it on, and I understood that it was a joke. I thought it was kind of funny.
I do agree that he did mean it with some irony or, you know,
the way it's being taken. The way it's being taken.
But I also think it was it was one of those jokes with a lot of meaning packed into it. And it's also a joke about a topic that people who are having their lives torn apart by this don't find funny at all. You got to look at the broader context. It's not like he was just pontificating on the nature of Hawaii.
Yeah, but that's how he's being ganged up on right now.
But I think people are really tired of I know this is going to sound like a broken lefty clock, but whatever. I think people are really tired of old white guys getting the luxury of having a sense of humor about things that has no effect on them whatsoever.
Anytime anyone in the government has a sense of humor about something, there's going to be some people that it does not have an effect on.
I agree, but put it this way: John McCain got ganged up on for saying, making a joke about getting old and being able to hide your own Easter eggs.
When did that happen?
Oh, this was years ago. It was during the campaign. He said, "The great thing about getting old is you can hide your own Easter eggs." He was talking about himself.
I never heard that.
Oh, yeah. No, I understand why some people would get upset about that.
Either that, or I might be approaching that age where I did hear it and forgot it, and it's a new joke to me now.
Yeah, I think it was like 04 campaign. It was like Straight Talk Express McCain, or 2000, somewhere. Anyway, but my thought was always like, well, he was making a joke about himself there, you know? And that, I think, is a big difference. And so that's why I think, like, if the joke is about you or the joke is on you or you're participating in that joke, it's easy. But people are mad because of this, you know, delegitimization has become the coin of the realm with Trump and his entire administration. His entire political candidacy was founded on him trying to delegitimize the president, since he wasn't born in America. And so I think further delegitimization on a topic that is not just tangentially but directly related to something that is super important to a lot of people's lives on the part of somebody for whom it is a whim and the fates will have no effect on them, however this goes, I think that is what people find offensive.
Well, very few Americans will have this effect on them. Basically, what they're saying is that they just want a suspension of people immigrating from terrorist nations. It's not,
Well, that is a larger topic for another day, but that is not going to fit in the next 4 seconds, so. On to segment two. Happier days, question mark?
And we're back on the rule of three. I was just going to do the tag again, because we don't have three topics. We still have two comics. Still have only 10 minutes. What we're going to talk about later is why there was not a show last week. It was a little secret. We didn't want to broadcast it. But I think the first thing we want to tackle here is the thing, of course, that's all over the Facebook pages, is the passing of little Joni from Happy Days. I guess that's something. It's one of the those characters from a TV sitcom that everybody remembers. I don't think modern sitcoms have that attachment. I think probably Friends might be the last sitcom where people are actually find themselves attached, or maybe The Office, but would be the last sitcom that people actually feel attached to the characters as if they're part of the family, so that one of those characters actually moves on to their great reward. Is that we think that that we lost a member of the family. You know, I can't see...
Well, there was also fewer options back then, so everybody watched the same stuff, too. It was that communal, you know.
Oh, sure, sure. I'm not saying that there's not a reason for it. But
there's a lot of reasons for it, probably, right?
And
but yeah, no, you know, you're totally right, though. People are not, you know, I mean, people are going to be bummed when Willie from Alf dies. that was pretty third tier.
Yeah,
but yeah, Happy Days was a big show, and you know, the other sort of curse of that show with that name is that unless the rest of your life has a really rosy outcome, it's just fodder for ironic headline writers.
Absolutely, as if you've read the obituary of Erin Moran, I think that's I don't know if we've even said her name yet. If you read the obituary of Erin Moran, you in Variety, you would see that they interviewed all the characters, and I was speculating earlier that Danny Most was probably terribly excited when he got the phone call from Variety. Whereas Ron Howard probably put them off for a day or two. Whereas
yeah, like you ever call somebody and you're like, I didn't hear a ring. You're like, oh, it rang over here. You're like, really? I didn't hear a ring.
And I would also imagine that Henry Winkler called them.
He was probably already stopping by the offices to deliver people bagels. He's like famously the nicest human being in all of showbiz.
So that was and all of them said, I hope she finds peace. So I guess her life post loving Chachi has not been quite as happy as you might think.
Exactly, and the danger of that pun is why I will only be on a sitcom if it is titled "He Did His Best."
Did you do you remember, and a lot of people don't remember this, do you remember that Richie and Joni had a brother?
No, you know, I've seen a bunch of scattered episodes of Happy Days, but never on a continuum enough. It's one of those weird shows where, like, sometimes people would be gone if you, you know, like, from rerun to rerun. You're like, hey, what happened? We're missing some people.
Yeah. No, it was, he was only in a couple episodes. He was, like, away at college. And he just kind of never came back, and they never talked about him anymore. There was one, I think it was that he came home for Christmas. I still remember the episode, and Joni has this present for him, and it's perfectly round, and she bounces it over to him, and he catches it, and he goes, "Guess what it is?" And he goes, "Don't do that, you might break it." So that's all I remember of the second brother, And it's like I said, he just kind of disappeared from the series. He was never, you know, the fact that he disappeared, it was kind of like switching Darrens in Bewitched.
Yeah, exactly.
It was just one of those things that, no, you never would, don't ever talk about. And I think what actually happened with the Darren, though, is that Endora changed him into a more waspy character, and then also put a spell on everyone so they didn't recognize it.
Really? They actually wrote that in there?
No, I did.
Oh, because that would actually make I mean, of all the shows where you would be able to do that, Bewitched is actually one that you could really plausibly pull that off.
Yeah, and Dora could have said, I don't like your face. Bring! And then it's, you're not going to get away with this, Endora. People are going to recognize that I've changed. It's like, no, I'll put a spell on everyone. And then just leave
it. We should write a Lost Bewitched episode. I like this idea. It's like in Rogue One when they went back and plugged up the Death Star plot hole. Like the whole movie was basically written to fix a plot hole.
Yeah. That is kind of funny when you've got such a group source going over the plot line.
Absolutely.
That you can actually find those holes, because you know a lesser known film, the plot hole would be, you know, just you and me would see it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. As opposed to it's been studied frame by frame. I actually saw a newspaper headline. We're way off topic, but who cares? I saw a topic that said there was some episode of a Star Wars cartoon, and it apparently answered a question people had. There was a whole episode about how their Boba Fett got a dent in his helmet.
Wow.
Like, you really scraped the bottom of the stuff to explain barrel when you're like, well, one guy's a ding in his helmet. I wonder how he got that ding in his helmet. It's like, I don't know. It's a helmet and he fights people. I think we can pretty much work it out.
So what was the plot hole?
Of Bewitched?
No, of
Rogue One?
Yeah.
Oh, Rogue One, the whole plot hole, the whole movie is about how the guy who designed the Death Star intentionally built a little portal that would make it easy to blow the whole thing up.
Oh, okay.
That was an intentional design flaw.
Was that the one I saw somewhere they also plugged up the reason why stormtroopers can't hit anything?
Oh, yeah, that was in Force Awakens. I'm sad that I know as much of this. I rewatched Rogue One on a plane. I'm really not a Star Wars guy. I'm really not. But I was on a plane. I watched Rogue One again.
Is that? I guess it's because of the Force, right? Because the Force deflects pews.
Well, I wish it would deflect me from having to see any more of these sequels. I'll tell you that. But that ain't gonna happen anytime soon.
But anyway,
it is interesting. Yeah, that
back to.
I wonder, do you think there will ever be a TV show again that does that? The way like Happy Days or some of those, you know, like Friends does.
No, I'm saying The Office.
The Office, by the way. That was a good call.
The Office is probably the last one.
I don't think people
have
the same relationship to Big Bang Theory. I don't think they care about the characters as much.
It's no. Well. Maybe, but again, that's a real select demographic, you know, people who love the Big Bang Theory, you know all the characters, but it's not like it was before where it was universal, where you can say, oh my God, that's like something Sheldon would do. And everyone would go, oh yeah, it is. And if you said that, most people would go Sheldon.
Yeah. If you said Kramer, everybody would know who you were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, or Jim and Pam. Okay, well,
reminds me, since we're talking about this, is that I just found out that Two Broke Girls is in syndication now.
Is it still on?
Not only is it on, they have enough episodes that the networks are buying to run them in the 6 o'clock slot, the local affiliates. Well,
they're not Two Broke Girls anymore. They got syndication money. Good for them. Two residual girls.
Which, yeah, exactly. I can't even tell you. I can't even tell you the girls' names. So.
Well, one of them is Kat Dennings. I find her. Well,
yeah. What's the character she plays?
Oh, I've never seen the show.
Yeah. Everybody knows.
I don't watch a lot of network sitcoms, though.
Every American male is familiar with Kat Dennings.
Yeah, she's lovely. But no, I don't know. No. But no, I mean, and it's different too. Like, I love Silicon Valley, but I don't feel connected to those characters in a personal way, even though I'm very invested in watching the show because it's so funny.
You know, that's true with the Verizon commercial. It's a lot of people. A lot of people recognize what's his face,
Middleditch. Yeah, Thomas Middleditch
doing the mic drop, So I guess it's. But yeah, but again. It's my wife. She sees those commercials and goes, "Why is that guy familiar?" I go, "Huh? You probably heard me up late at night cackling and came downstairs to tell me to turn down the TV."
Yeah, that's about right. So, I've had that before with that show.
And rest in peace, Aaron Moran. We strayed far away from you in our segment, but
she'll be missed.
That's the way it goes.
I was so overloaded, too much was on my mind. Back before you exploded, you were a friend of mine.
And on the final segment of Rule of Three, we were not around last week because I was not around last week. I did something that I have not done since, I think, probably the fifth grade, huh. Which is I went on vacation for a week.
Oh, okay. Wow. Phew. Yeah. It made me a little nervous there.
You're like, man, Friends was really riled you up. But, oh, no. I've covered that many times since fifth grade. No, I've never really taken a vacation. I've always had jobs where you – I mean, I've taken a – you know, my wife and I would go out for a weekend here or there. But I've always just worked a lot and didn't have the kind of job that really suited it. Plus, you know, we travel all the time. So when I get time off, I want to stay home usually.
Yeah, absolutely.
But for our 10-year anniversary, my wife and I went to Paris. And I had never left the country before at all.
Really?
And no, first time out of the country, even to Mexico or Canada.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Crazy.
It was great. We had a great time. I will say, there's really not much to complain about, only mostly good things, with the exception of I'd never traveled internationally with my wife before, and I had not put two key factors together, which is that traveling internationally and riding around all this public transit was going to be different than our usual drive up to somewhere vacation. And my wife packs like she's Elizabeth Taylor, permanently relocating to the International Space Station.
Yeah, they tend to do that.
I mean, I looked like Indiana Jones, like carrying all of Kate Capshaw's luggage in Temple of Doom before he's told her what he really thinks about her. You know, I mean, we're going through the airport, and we had seven bags, and I'm just bowled under trying to carry these seven astonishingly heavy bags, two of which are mine. And we finally get to the hotel at one point, and I unzipped the largest of the bags, and inside the bag was a box fan.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, no, I don't mean quite the full 3 foot tall box fan.
No, I got it.
A hard plastic shell fan made to sit in a window and draw air in and out of a full-sized person's house.
It's did it have a tag on it that the TSA opened that one?
Surprisingly, no.
Huh. Because they probably looked at it at the X-ray and they said, so what do you think about that? And they looked at it, they said, some guy's going to be really mad at his wife when he opens that suitcase.
Yes, that's right. Because, you know, we're doing three transfers to get from Charles de Gaulle to our hotel, and we're going up and down these old train station stairs. There's no escalator. So I'm hauling these seven bags up three flights of stairs at one point. I mean, I finally see this box van, and I was like, I would have stayed up all night and blown on you to avoid carrying this box van.
I would have fanned you like a Nubian slave.
Oh yeah, I would have been I'd have hired a bunch of other French dudes, and we would all just stand around waving brochures from the street. Like, oh my god!
In Mrs. Miller's defense, she doesn't go on the road as often as you do.
That's totally true. That is absolutely true.
When you've spent some time on the road, you learn how to economize the packing. You learn how to you know, pack exactly the right amount of underwear, the exact amount of socks, you have categories. I mean, you can put it. We can travel on with a bag charge. We've learned how to avoid the bag charge and pack for a couple weeks in something that fits in the overhead compartment.
Absolutely. My wife was stunned when I said, we went to check bags, and I said, well, you're going to have to lead the way. I don't know how to do this. And she's like, oh, come on. And I was like, no, I've literally never checked a bag in my entire life.
Really?
I've gone for a long trip. Nope, never have. I pack really light. I mean, I'll absolutely just pack half as many clothes as I need, hit up a laundromat, do some laundry and do that. No, I'm real bad. You know, I will intentionally make sure I'm not reading a book that's too big. You know, I'll bring like a small paperback book with me.
Mm-hmm.
No, I pack real light.
No, I do that too, but just occasionally I just don't like to deal with the bag. So I quite often check it. And it's
I'm weird about keeping everything with me. I like everything
sure
on my person.
No, it's understood. That is funny. That is a wow. It must have been. Is it the first time you've traveled with your wife via air that you've actually?
One other time we went to my buddy Wes's wedding in North Carolina or South Carolina. So we flew to Atlanta and drove to South Carolina. But you know, that was a 3-day trip, and it was a bunch of me and my wife and a bunch of my buddies. So I don't really remember that trip very well. That was fun, but it was basically a bachelor party with my wife driving us all around. So
yeah, it's
bit of a haze. But it was 3 days it was 3 days in the United States when it was hot. So there was it like even everything
no
my
fan?
Wife brought was
and
all,
there
like,
was no fan.
Well, no, because my own. That's true. There was no fan.
It's because she assumed that every place in America is air conditioned,
and it was.
Yep.
It absolutely was.
It's
but no, you know, it was great though. Europe was great. We packed in a lot of stuff. Went to a lot of the big museums, and we saw Carmen at the Bastille Opera House, which was pretty incredible.
Oh, neat.
That was something else. I wanted to go into the catacombs. Because I just think that sounds fascinating. Little travel tip: if you're ever going to Paris and you want to do the catacombs, you got to get tickets online ahead of time, at least a week in advance, because the get tickets today line was 6 hours long.
Oh my gosh!
And my wife's like, "Do you really want to go?" And I said, "There's literally nothing in the world that I find worth standing in line 6 hours for. I cannot imagine a thing that I wouldn't just dip out of line for at some point."
Why is there a 6-hour line?
Because there's a limited number of people that can go into the catacombs because it's very small.
Uh-huh.
And they can only let in groups of 200 every 45 minutes. And they sell like 20% of the tickets online ahead of time, but they allow the rest of them for walk-up. But the problem is the line for walk-up tickets only moves at all every 45 minutes.
So how often do you have to get them in advance? I mean, could you have the first day, could you have bought the tickets for the last day?
I don't want to lead anybody too far astray because it was Easter weekend. So there was a lot of traveling going on.
Probably a lot of people wanted, because the catacombs, I mean, that's where they held mass when it was forbidden, right? Is that?
I think there was something. Yeah. But I've heard it's always a really long line, and that you probably need to get your tickets at least 5 days ahead of time. When we saw the line, I said, well, we're going to be here tomorrow till like late afternoon. I said, I'm going to go online, get an early morning ticket for tomorrow, come back, you know, work it all out. I couldn't get tickets for 3 days online. They were sold out.
Huh. Wow.
Of the pre-sale. So if you're going to Paris, get the catacomb tickets really early.
Groups of 200. I mean, that sounds kind of claustrophobic.
Oh, they tell you basically once you're down there, you're down there. There's no bathrooms. If you freak out, we're sorry. You're going to have to finish. There's no, you're when you're down there, you're down there.
If you freak out, you're going to have to finish. That's a sign at that Seattle farm, if you remember what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it absolutely. Well, it was interesting. And actually, that. I was like, I wonder if I'm going to freak out. And then I thought, no, I'm not going to freak out. I want to do this. And by then it was too late. But it was all right. We saw that. We went to Giverny, where Monet used to live, and we stayed across the street at Monet's house, from Monet's house, and ate at Monet's favorite restaurant, which was the best meal I've ever had in my entire life.
Wow.
I told my wife, we got done eating, and we were both just like, I can't believe how great that was. And it wasn't the fanciest place we went by any stretch. It was a 3-course, 30-euro meal. I said, I'm really annoyed now. And she said, why? And she says, because I'm going to have to lie, because it's too pretentious if somebody ever says, what's your favorite restaurant, for me to say, oh, it's a small hotel restaurant in the mountains of Giverny in France. It was Monet's favorite restaurant. Like, it's the ponciest answer you could possibly have to that question. So I'm just going to have to be like, hey, Chili's pretty good. Chili's is tasty.
I've never liked Chili's.
No, Chili's is terrible. But I hate the. I hate the. I just. I,
no,
I,
no,
I,
no, no. I,
that
no,
that's
I understand,
the
but I want to get this in. Chili's. I like the concept of Chili's much better than I've ever enjoyed it. I've never. We're never going to get a sponsorship from Chili's, but I don't know what it is. It sounds like it should be a restaurant you would enjoy. Yeah, a franchise. You know, is what it is. But you're right. There's just nothing. There's nothing on the menu that appeals to me. There's and you think that would. You see that chili pepper, and it's like, oh, maybe they'll have chili. They don't even have chili at Chili's.
My ex-girlfriend and I, when we were broke college students, used to always go to this one Chili's in a mall outside, or near a mall outside Springfield, because they had really friendly management and really incompetent staff, and they would screw your meal up like 2 out of every 3 times. And when they did, they would just comp you the meal, or they would give you free dessert and tickets for a free meal to come back. And at one point, we were on a streak of 3 times in a row of not having paid, and we were just like, yeah, let's just keep this going. They'd bring me a burger, and I was like, I'll eat a free burger. Sure, didn't order it. Or it'd take an hour to get there. So yeah, Chili's is my favorite restaurant. Definitely not the Hotel Baudy in Giverny.
So here's the big question I got to ask, because we were talking about this when I was in town. Did you fly over the North Pole to get there?
We did not. They had a flight tracker on our flight, and you could watch the flight path.
Uh-huh.
We flew basically up to the British, not British Columbia, the eastern isles of Canada.
Like Newfoundland and Labrador up that
way? Yeah, like Newfoundland stuff. Yeah. We kind of flew over Newfoundland in a slight arc. And
then came down like over England?
And then came down. Yep. And it turns out that France or Paris is not so terribly far off of our longitude.
Huh.
It's not an exact parallel, but it's not that far off.
Uh-huh.
So it was in a way a fairly straight-ish flight.
So you kind of flew Lindbergh's route.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Yeah. Luckily, we didn't fly Amelia Earhart's route. We picked the right aviator to emulate. And the plane ride was fine. I watched a bunch of episodes of Silicon Valley, which was great. And I successfully fended off the nice fella next to me, who did everything he could to bait me into asking the question, so what's the novel about that you're writing? You would have been proud of my verbal ducking and dodging as I did everything I could to not ask that question.
And on that note, all the episodes on iTunes, timslegel.com.
And at BrianMillerComedy.com and at Real Brian Miller on Twitter. That's a Real Brian Miller with a Y.
We'll see you next week.